ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। On this third day of December 2013 in Olancho, Florida, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the Samambonam, chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet for the Rasa Dance, starting with text number 5. Duhantyo biyayu kaschid, doham hitva samutsukaha, Payo Dishritya Sanyavam Anun Vasya Parayayuhu Duhantyo Vyayu Kaschid Dohang Hitva Samutsuka Payo Dishritya Sanyavam Adun Vasya Parayayuhu Duhantyo Biyayu Kaschid Dohang Hitva Samutsukaha Bhayo Dishritya Sanyavam Anun Vasya Parayayuhu Duhantyo bhiyayu kaschid Doham hitva samutsuka Bhayo dishritya samyavam Anunvasya parayayuhu Duhantyo bhiyayu kaschid Doham hitva samutsuka Bhayo dishritya samyavam Anudvasya parayayuhu Duhantyo bhiyayu kaschid Doham hitva samutsuka Bhayo dishritya samyavam Ladies? Duhantyo biyayu kaschid Doham hitva samutsuka Bhayo dishritya samyavam Anudvasya parayayuhu Duhantyo bhiyayu kaschid Doham hitva samutsuka Bhayo dishritya samyavam Anudvasya parayayuhu Duhantyaha. In the middle of milking the cows. Abhiyayuhu. Went away. Kaschit. Some of them. Doham. The milking. Hitva. Abandoning. Samutsukaha. Extremely eager. Payaha. Milk, adishritya, having placed on the stove, sanyavam, cakes made of flour, anudvasya, without removing from the oven, aparaha, others, yayuhu, went. Translation, some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Purport, the eagerness of these cowherd girls so lovingly devoted to young Krishna is shown here. So I'll read the next verse on my own. We should hear the Sanskrit. Padiveshayantastaditva pahiyantya shisunpayaha shushushantya patin kaschid ashnantyo paspasya bojanam limpantya prambajantyo nya anjantya kascha lochane vyatyasta vastra badana kaschid krishnantikam yayuhu. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands. But they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed off to Krishna. So we don't have any purports here, but I'm going to read commentary. Oops, goodness. What did I do? Okay. So this is some commentary from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Three verses describe the gopis. These are the three verses we read, 5, 6, and 7. Three verses describe the gopis' complete absence of attachment to their duties in their haste to meet Krishna. So they're giving up their duties, and then in text 8 they actually give up their husbands and children and fathers. Some of them gave up their normal duties. They were made to milk the cows. They were milking the cows, but they gave up milking the cows in order to meet Krishna. Some gopis left the pots of milk boiling on the stoves in order to meet Krishna, and others left wheat cakes cooking in the oven. Text 6 describes how they gave up their duties as wives and mothers. Some gave up serving food and left. Some gave up serving their husbands with warm water and rendering other services. Text 7 describes how they gave up their normal dressing. They gave up applying chandan and other ornaments and left the house. Others gave up applying oil and turmeric on their bodies and left. Other gopis in great haste could not distinguish the hand from the foot or the nose from the ear and placed their ornaments in the wrong place. This indicates vibhrama, one of the anubhavas or symptoms of intense love. Vibhrama means complete bewilderment. The scriptures say, when a person at the time of meeting the lover out of love dons ornaments and garlands on the wrong bodily parts, it is called vibhrama. So also, I just wanted to read Prabhupada's rendering of these from his Krishna book. Immediately upon hearing the vibration of the flute, all the gopis left their respective engagements and proceeded to the spot where Krishna was standing. While they ran very swiftly, their earrings swung back and forth. They all rushed toward the place known as Vankshivat. Some of them were engaged in milking cows, but they left their milking business half finished and immediately went to Krishna. One of them had just collected milk and put it in the milk pan on the stove to boil, but she did not care whether the milk overboiled and spilled. She immediately left to go see Krishna. Some of them were breastfeeding their small babies, and some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their families. But they left all such engagements and immediately rushed toward the spot where Krishna was playing his flute. Some were engaged in serving their husbands. Some were themselves engaged in eating. But caring neither to serve their husbands nor to eat, they immediately left. Some of them wanted to decorate their faces with cosmetic ointments and to dress themselves very nicely before going to Krishna. But unfortunately, they could not finish their cosmetic decorations or put on their clothes in the right way because of their anxiety to meet Krishna immediately. Their faces were decorated hurriedly and were haphazardly finished. Some even put the lower part of their clothes on the upper part of their bodies and the upper part on the lowest part. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, what is to be said about this madness, divine madness of the gopis to meet Krishna? The flute call has, it's just acting like a powerful magnet, and their hearts are just like iron filings. It's not like they're deciding to go meet Krishna. They're practically involuntarily dragged out. You can see they don't even have the ability, or they can't even take the time or the attention to properly dress themselves or decorate themselves, what to speak of, continue with their housely duties. So materialists may criticize, well, what kind of religion is this? Here you have these very chaste ladies at home with their husbands performing essential services to the children, right? They're suckling their children, they're serving their husbands, they're cooking meals, they're milking the cows, all very serious duties that Vaishyas and Vaishya ladies need to perform. And yet this is all left out. You know, this is now they're abandoning these. Later on, Krishna will also take a role of a very proper instructor and say, well, what have you come out here for? You came out here to see the forest. It's very nice, you know. And now you've seen it, but it's very dangerous, and you should go back. And it's, also, you should understand that adulterous affairs never lead to higher planets for women, for chaste ladies. You know? And so this is not a good idea to come out in the middle of the night with me. I'm a single man. You're married, many of you. Like, even if. So they have this verse describing the effect of the flute. They have a kind of a song of full submission and arguing with Krishna. So they say, Viksya lakavata, they say, Kastangate kalapadayata vena gita, sammohitaya charitana chaletrilokyam, trilokya salbhagam vidamcha nadikshurupam, yad god vijad humamagam palakanya bibram. So they say, what woman in all three worlds would not wander away from the arya, from what is known as the proper behavior? When you play your song of the flute with its drawn out nectarian notes, sammohitaya would not be completely bewildered and attracted by this sound. Even what to speak of us hearing the sound of the flute, even the animals and the trees and the cows and other animals, they manifest, their hair stands in them just to see your form. So what about us, ladies? Naturally, you can't argue that this is your fault. If anyone, it's your fault for playing that flute. So they go through this whole explanation of how they're not going back. They can't go back. Say, what will we do now? Our hearts have been completely won over by you, and if you have a responsibility now to extinguish the fire of attraction that you ignited in our hearts by your glances and by your flute sound and by all these other things. So they're very, very clever in arguing with Krishna, and he loses the argument and he begins enjoying the rasa dance. And then, of course, they become a little proud and he leaves. That comes later. So here we're seeing the highest development that there can possibly be between attraction of the living entity and to Krishna. It's beyond anything we can even imagine. We're struggling, to fix our minds on Krishna. So and when we do, we feel some attraction. The whole festival of the holy name, as Srila Prabhupada revealed to us, that the Hare Krishna mantra is a manifestation of Krishna's flute song in this world. And so we're being attracted to Krishna. And if we chant, the purer we chant, the more we'll be attracted to Krishna. But just how far that can be taken is shown by the gopis. And this is indeed one of Lord Chaitanya's purposes in coming. This is part of his teachings. It's described, what are Lord Chaitanya's teachings in a nutshell? This is a verse from the Chaitanya Mandusha, is often quoted. It says, Aradyo Bhagavan. These are the lessons that Lord Chaitanya gave, and I don't know anything beyond them. I don't know who wrote this verse with the Sri Dhammadhar Goswami. Who was it? Vishnu Chakravarti. Thank you for that. Okay. Oh, okay.
Prabhupada says, I heard a few times,
Okay. So what the verse says is, it's very interesting, there's a progression here. It says, one should worship Bhagavan. Well, this is generic. Arajo Bhagavan. But not just any manifestation of Bhagavan, Vajesha Tanaya, the son of the king of Braja, namely Krishna in Vrindavan. And also one should worship his Dhamma, the Vrindavan, as well as also extension of Krishna, manifestation of his internal energy. Then one should ask, well, how should one worship? And now we're hearing exactly here. Ramya Kachit Upasana Vrajavadu. The Vrajavadus are the ladies in Vrindavan. And then we say, well, okay, what's the evidence for all of this? Srimad Bhagavatam Pramana Mamalam. And if you accept all of that, then what's the goal of it all? Prema Pumato Maham is pure love for Krishna. And the Bodhi says, this is Lord Chaitanya's teaching, I don't know anything beyond this. This is the essence of everything. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the 10th canto, is the summum bonum, and the essence, the crown jewel of it is this, these five chapters describing the rasa dance. At the very end of these five chapters, it is said that one who hears these pastimes and repeats them with great faith, Vikriditam Vajavadub here, again the word Vajavadub, Vishnu, Shadhanvato, Nushunaya, Atavaranayeta, with great faith, hears them and repeats them, Bhaktim Param Padavilabda, what is it? Kama Rigrogam Asha Padanot Achidevadira. One will attain bhakti at the highest pitch and be completely cured, very quickly cured of the disease of lust. So this is an important verse. First of all, it brings us back to the understanding. This is Vishnu. This is the Supreme Personality of God. Use that very word, Vishnu. And how to hear with great faith and great devotion. Shuddhanvato anusuniyat. And describing them, here again, according to the, as it's been described and explained by the great acharyas, anusuniyat. Then quickly one, Krishna will bestow bhakti upon such a person and conquer the, and immediately eradicate, quickly eradicate the disease of lust, rid-rogam is described, the disease of the heart. And one will become dhira, self-realized, God-realized. So it's important to hear these chapters, we're beginning now, and this word utsuka, some utsuka, complete enthusiasm, anxiety, more than enthusiasm, anxiety to extremely eager and obsessed with meeting Krishna. So we're enjoined that this is a basic principle of devotional service, even in sadhana bhakti, is to be enthusiastic, right? Utsahan nishtahad daryat. So in the process of trying to move toward purity, from our conditioned state, we need to be enthusiastic and determined and patient in the matter of performing all of the activities of devotional service. Because our attraction and our natural attraction to Krishna and to performing devotional service, that will wax and wane in our conditioned state, in an impure state. But still, even when there's no attraction, even when there's no desire, if we do it anyway, in other words, we chant the rounds, we come to the temple, we perform our devotional services as well as we can with great attention, study the books, associate with devotees, do all the things that we know Srila Prabhupada has given us, then we'll... Krishna from within the heart will cleanse away all of these things that are preventing our attraction to Krishna. Just like it's a, or you described like iron filings moving toward a magnet. So if the iron filings are, you know, covered by saran wrap, you know, or maybe even thicker covering, there won't be so much attraction. There'll be something, but you can't see it. So getting rid of the anartas, purifying the heart, means coming to the natural state in which we are spontaneously attracted to serve Krishna. This is what is actually being described here. Raga atmika bhakti. Raga means great eagerness and desire for something. Now we're enjoined on the material side, jita raga vaya krodha, right? Give up material attachment, which just leads to great fear and anger when it's frustrated. You have to be free of that. But on the spiritual side, we're trying to develop raga. It's just 180 degrees. But Srila Prabhupada so nicely explains that this very kama, this very attraction that we have to the material energy, is simply love of God that's been transformed, it's been curdled, if you will, by contact with the modes of nature. So understanding, or intellectually, that our natural position is one of great eagerness to serve Krishna and in all variety of ways, in a specific rasa, and that this is the platform of true happiness and success in life. Understanding that and understanding the ways to do it, then it is up to us to bring our senses to bear to come to the point and move toward this. So now, one thing that came to mind when I was reading this, there's no purport, is that this idea of abandoning one's duties, this also comes up in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the Chakvasva Dharmam Chadanam Bhajam Hareya. Now, we start from the position of, Srila Prabhupada, as the movement progressed, he, especially the last year or two, he was talking a lot about Varnashram Dharma. He was talking about our organizing our society so that everyone is situated nicely in their position where they should be, so they can progress to a devotional service. That's Daivi Varnashram Dharma. But at the same time, there's always this other aspect where you don't want to become simply engaged in your swadharma without enough of the sanatana dharma, without enough of the real dharma, that's beyond all of the designations. You see what I'm saying? So in the beginning of Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni is speaking to Vyasa and explaining to him why he should write one more book, namely the Bhagavad Purana, after having written all the other Puranas, the Mahabharata and these things, he says, you haven't sufficiently emphasized a pure devotional service beyond all the designations. You haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exclusively. Yes, there's some of that in the Mahabharata, but there's all kinds of mundane stories and things also. What will happen is people become interested in the stories, they'll forget about the bhakti, or they'll become interested in the material aspect of the Vedas that you also wrote down, going to the heavenly planets. So the one of the verses that Srila Prabhupada would always quote is the Chakvasva Dharmam Chadanam Bhajan Hare Bhajanna Bhakvota Bhateta Toyadi Yatra Kavabad Dharma Buddha Mushikim Kovata Ato Abhajatam Sadhanadha. So if this verse says that if someone gives up his position in Varnashram, materialistic duties, and takes fully to the bhajan, to the worship of Krishna, Hari, but somehow or other doesn't complete the course and falls away, where is there any loss? Where is there any loss? Because as we know right from Bhagavad Gita, Neha Vikramanashosti, there's no loss or diminution. You pick up from next life. But if someone very nicely performs his duties, but there's no bhajan of Krishna, where is there any gain? There's no gain, because whatever you get in this life is lost at the time of death. So therefore, tasyaiva heto payate kovido, that's the next verse. Therefore, one who is covered, who is intelligent, should strive in this lifetime for what he cannot attain from the higher planets to the lower planets. Because what people are trying to attain is a better position in this lifetime, better birth, or even going to the heavenly planets, you see. But all of that is temporary. That doesn't really get you closer to your goal, and it just distracts. So he says, and you have a certain amount of happiness and a certain amount of distress that's programmed in from your previous life. As time goes on, and the karmic record it plays out, you're going to have a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress, and you really can't increase that. You may become very rich by great effort, but you won't be any happier. Whereas the poor man, who's a simple farmer, he'll be very happy. You know? So you're working to become happy, but you're not becoming happier. And you're working to get rid of distress, but you're not able to do that, really. So therefore, what's the point? Rather, one should strive. Not that we're just fatalists, just let it come, whatever comes, comes. No, one should strive very hard for Krishna consciousness. That's where our effort should be. And so it's interesting that this giving up of the duties here, of course, is on a whole different level. You know, they're simply performing these duties for Krishna to begin with, but now that he wants them to come out with the flute, that's obvious, then they give these up without a second thought. And also one thing that Vishwanath Thakurvaka explains in the next verse, that'll be spoken of tomorrow, is that how to get free of the bonds of the husband, the fathers, you know, and the brothers. You know, they don't want to go out either. So he says, Yoga Maya created duplicates, and they stayed there. And so they weren't upset either. They thought their wives were there. And later on, when Krishna, what happens here is that they go to meet him. He has this play, this tricky talk that's kind of, welcome, how can I serve you? Or welcome, what can I do for you? You know, I see you must have come out to see the forest. It's very beautiful, I can understand that. But it's very dangerous. There are tigers, there are other animals here. It's not a good place for you. You know, so he's speaking negatively. And then they have this argument back that I quoted that one verse about the flute and some others. So he relents, which he wanted to do anyway, and he starts speaking, playing with them on the bank, and they get a little proud and he disappears. That's going to happen too. Then again they become mad, so mad that they even think they are Krishna. This is another aspect of this whole thing. A lot of the rasa dance is madness and separation, isn't it? And then finally, he comes back, But while he's away, there's these songs you're going to read in chapter 31. And they also mention this, what's happening right here. They say, Patisutangaya, Brata Bandavan, Atavalangite, Nachutagata, Gativedastavo, Gita Mohita, Kita Vayoshita, Kasta Jainashi. They're accusing Krishna of being a cheater. It says, bewildered by your flute song, we gave up our husbands, our children, Patisutanvaya, our relatives, and our brothers, Brata and our Bandavan, in order to come near your lotus feet. You know very well why we've come out here. Who but a cheater would leave women in the middle of the night, in the middle of the forest? They're accusing him like that. So eventually, of course, he reappears after this wonderful song. This is a very famous Gopi Gita. Hopefully you can memorize a few of the verses when they come. They're in a unique meter. It's the only place in the Bhagavatam that this most famous one, chanted and quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kavabariditam karmashapaham shavanamangalam simaratatam bhuvagunandehe bodhidhajana. This is very appropriate since the book distribution marathon is coming. It's actually very enlightening for preachers. So they're saying there, talks about you, the nectar of tapakatamritam tapta jivanam, as the life and soul of the living entity suffering in this world. These vibrations are vibrated by great kavis, by great poets, kavibadiditam, and they destroy all sinful reactions, kamashavana. Very auspicious to hear, shavana mangalam, full of spiritual power, srimad atatam bhuvaganandiye buddhi. Certainly those who are spreading your message throughout this world are the most munificent welfare workers. Lord Chaitanya was hearing all of these verses of that chapter from King Pataparuja. When he heard that verse, he got up and embraced him. You're the most munificent, you're the most munificent. For, vibrating this. So, this has come, this is, very wonderful verse. So these gopis, they're great poets too. They're the ones who are chanting these songs, right? And many, in India, they learn these prayers. So, this is a, you know, we're entering into this now, and it's there's all kinds of varieties of meanings that I'm sure you'll hear. There is in a few verses there'll be a very detailed explanation. Prabhupada also gives it in his Krishna book of who these gopis are, who, you know, where they're coming from. Some are Krishna's eternal associates, they're coming from the spiritual world. Others are graduating through this platform from living on earth. There are the Municharis, right? Are those the ones from the personified Vedas, and the residents or the rishis in the Dandakaranya forest, who wanted to have the relation with Ram, but it wasn't appropriate, and so they said, you'll have to take birth as gopis, which they did. So when you realize the background and the context of this, it's very rich and amazing what's going on here. And not only that, but the length. It's described, many, many nights were compressed into one. There's many nights, and the length of Brahma, Brahma's night, which is, what is that, 4,320,000,000 years, was all compressed into one. So this is the epitome of, time flies when you're having fun, you know? they all didn't notice that it was a night of Brahma. It was going so fast. But with Krishna's separation, even the moment appears like a yuga. You know, this is the intensity of love that the gopis have for Krishna. So I'd like to, before we open up the for comments, I'd like to share a few of the flute verses that I didn't get to chant last time. There's so many verses that if you want some really sweet verses there in this chapter, in this section, and also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita quoted from Vidagdha Madhava, beautiful verses about the flute. But here's a couple that I put into poems. So this one you probably haven't heard before. This is from the that I think I mentioned this Astadasha Chandastava, a summary of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. Jagadudhudamadhuri dhurinam adunamandidamindaradurapa mamatarsha badam vadantakatvam mudali narasudhadhuri dhuritam. Your flute sends forth a flood of nectarous sound, a river where the sweetest sweetness lies. Indeed, no better beverage can be found, yet even Shri can't drink it, though she tries. O Krishna, kindly hear this desperate plea from one now deep in misery immersed. Please let my ears drink in that melody, so that my heart may slake its burning thirst. Hare Krishna. Prayer to hear the flute sound. Then here's another one from Rupa Goswami from the Mukunda Muktavali. This is, he says, Urari katam urari dutabangam navajadadadikidan orasadangam yuvati vidayatata madanatabangam panamata yamana tatikatabangam. His flute emanates entrancing sounds for the cowherd girls whose love abounds for the clever cloud-complexioned lord who's dancing upon the Kalindi shore. A nice little mantra. If you chant it 10 times, you'll feel it. Any questions or comments? Kind of a difficult verses to speak on. Pran Govinda Prabhu. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, Shesh, I didn't see you.
Thank you, Dravida Prabhu. You started to mention Prabhupada's emphasis on Varnashram. Mm-hmm. And I thought you were going to compare that a bit, but maybe I zoned out a bit. But I didn't. Did you finish your thought?
Well,
on that?
Well, that was kind of introducing this verse from Chakravarti Dharma, but I can get into that a little more. As the movement expanded, you know, Prabhupada realized, he saw that there needed to be, stable communities. That everything wasn't just going to be living in the temple. You know, brahmacharya and brahmacharini life. That's what wasn't going to happen, you know, very widely. Even his own devotees, many householders. And so he came to see, and as he had been preaching all along, that the actual way in which people can be engaged nicely is varnashram dharma. But it's very clear, you know, he made it all that this has to be centered on Krishna. And that verse, Atak Pumbir Dvidashresha, I was just listening to that today in the second chapter. that this word svanusmitasya, it appears in the Gita also. It means doing one's duties very nicely, you know. But the sangsiddhi, the success of it is when it's centered on, when it's for the satisfaction of Krishna. Now, the idea is that, you know, there are different stations in life. You know, the Christians know that there are stations. So, you know, with a growing Vaishnav community, and you'll have children, you'll have husbands and wives and fathers and grandfathers and everything else. You know, so this has to be within, ideally within the context of Varnashram, where people are properly engaged according to their psychophysical nature, all with Krishna in the center. You know, the understanding is that, my understanding is that the regulations of bhakti that Prabhupada set up, the morning program and all those things, those were given. It's not that, you know, that you're setting up communities where you know, that's not a central part of it. So everyone is on the same page. Everyone is a devotee of Krishna. That's their prime reason for what they're doing, you know. But in order to live, you know, harmoniously and keep body and soul together and prosper, then these communities are necessary. The statement of Narada Muni is that, you know, if someone is ready to, like, the way I read that verse was more on a practical level, was that, okay, if you give up your work in the material world, materialistic world, and you join the temple, and this is, you know, this is a fact, then don't think you're going to lose anything. In other words, this is a positive step forward. Even if you can't do it for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you still haven't lost anything. So don't hesitate. Now don't hesitate, Vyasadeva, my disciple, Narada is saying, to write completely and wholly and solely about, you know, Krishna and Krishna's incarnation and bhakti like that. And in that context, Varnashram comes up. There's a place in Bhagavatam, 7th canto, described 11th canto, where the details of Varnashram are included. But it's understood to be in the context of bhakti. But by way of contrast, here you have this is really a different phenomenon here. You know, they're giving up their duties, you know, but even those duties themselves are, all being done for Krishna, completely in ecstatic love. But now it's to a different level, you know. It's to a whole different level that they're being drawn away, and even they're breaking every rule, you know, the gopis. So Krishna consciousness is like that. On one level, you see it. It's a way of regulating. It's a way of becoming very ethical and moral, you know, in a society in which is going to hell, and you know, all rules are being broken, you know. But here, somehow or other, you can be lifted up from that by the process of Krishna consciousness, made into a human being, you know, following four regular principles and leading a peaceful life, vegetarianism, you know, controlling the senses. That's all an essential foundation, you know. But then you go through that, beyond that, and you get to this point of, which is part of our philosophy. CC is full of that, you know, of mad love for Krishna, which breaks all bonds, you know. I'm reminded, you know, there's so many instances in the CC. This came to mind. Lord Chaitanya's at the Garuda Stamba, you know, seeing Jagannath. He wouldn't go in the temple, because if he did, he would just faint, right? He did that first time. So he's, you know, he's in ecstasy, Govinda's next to him, and suddenly there's this old woman climbing on his shoulders, you know, which is about as big a violation of etiquette as you could imagine. She's a woman, you know, she's touching with her feet. He's a sannyasi, you know. Like. But so Govinda immediately got her off, and Lord Chaitanya chastised Govinda. Why? You know, obviously she was, you know, beyond that, she was simply fixed on Jagannath, and so much that she climbed up on the back of Lord Chaitanya to see him. So, you know, to accommodate both ends of this, you know, we have our regulations and the Varnashram Dharma, and, you know, we should try to find our place in that and live peacefully in that. But at the same time, at a certain point, there's another thing that happens, you know, this eagerness for Krishna that we should recognize when we see it in devotee who's, you know, who's advanced, you know, that really trumps, if you like, you know, even the Varnashram, even within our own. That's about what I have to say. Now, you may want to comment on it. Okay. Are we ready for Pran? Pran's next. Pran, go in the room. Please. 18th chapter of
Bhagavad Gita.
Uh-huh.
Svava jena kunteya nivadya sena karmana kartum nechusi janmahat karishyasi avasa apita. So Lord Krishna told to Arjuna that you are compelled to do that you are born with, the quality. So every human being in Alachua, beside the devotees, they will do whatever they are born to do with a particular combination of modes. Yeah. There is no choice. Interesting, in the Parpar Prabhupada put that Krishna is suggesting Arjuna that you will fight anyway, you will fight for Maya or you will fight for me, but that's require voluntary choice.
Mm-hmm.
So then a couple years back, Bhakti Chal Maharaj gave a Sunday class here. And at the end he says, just before Prabhupada left in Vrindavan, one day he was sitting and he was a little depressed. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Bhakti Chal Maharaj came nearby. This is what I heard from him. And he says that,
more close.
Then Srila Prabhupada says, I have only done 50% of my work. And then Bhakti Chal Maharaj was witnessing, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, what do you mean 50%? You have done such a great service to the world. Prabhupada says, no, 50% is left, is Varnashram Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
So I could not understand, but then when I was reading this purport, then Prabhupada gave in that conversation, mm-hmm. what Bhakti Chal Maharaj says, that people are born with a particular inclination. If Varnashram is established, that inclination will be accommodated,
uh-huh.
and they will be peaceful. Then they can chant mm-hmm. and get love of God.
Yeah.
So Varnashram is not our goal, but it is required.
Yeah. And the inclinations can be dovetailed then. You know, we've seen so many times. I mean, there are people who are born to write. You know, Satsu Maharaj is born to write. He must write, you know, which is fine. You know, and he's written and is writing so many things for Krishna. And, you know, other people are like born to sing, you know, it's fine. But there's so many millions of singers out there with nonsense, so many million writers. But those few that can be brought in, you know, to write for Krishna, sing for Krishna, do so many things, that's successful. You know, that was Prabhupada's idea. You know. And a good, you know, perfect vehicle for that is the Varnashram. You're situated nicely and you can do what you're supposed to do for Krishna. You know. So, you know, that's often quoted, that 50%. And we have yet to really achieve that. That's one of our goals. But it really is one of the problems I've seen, my own little take on it, is that it's very hard to do it because of the impingement of society, you know, as you try to set something up, but you have a permeable membrane, you know what I mean? You have the internet coming in, and you have, you know, the cars driving out, and you know, and you find that maybe your children are not so eager to be farmers as you had hoped, you know. And then what? You know, they're still your children. You know, so it's not so easy to do it in a society that's like this. So I think in India and Indonesia, you know, when you have a more of an isolated or more of a congenial atmosphere, they're actually developing, you know, communities that Bhakti Raghava Swami. Mukunda next. Okay. She's the lady first then.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned it, I do have a question. You said that the groundwork of the morning program is applicable for everyone in Prabhupada's conception of Varnashram.
Uh-huh.
But I remember reading, one of the conversations about Varnashram,
uh-huh.
and some temple leader was saying to Prabhupada, oh, you know, some devotees, this one or that one, they have difficulty following the program or chanting all their rounds, something to that effect. And Srila Prabhupada said, therefore the farms.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the part of the Bhagavad Gita, if you can't do that, do this, if you can't, you know. So then, isn't there a place or some part of the, say, farming community that would be able to accommodate people that, and actually I remember living at Gideon Irie so long, you know, the men would want to get out in the fields early before the sun is hot.
Right.
And that means, you know, if you have to sit until class is over at 9 a.m., you know, the best part of the farming day is gone. So can you respond to that?
Well, I mean, we have the evidence, working experiment. I mean, it's fine if you can. I mean, what do you do? You got to keep chanting. You may be behind the plow, but you got to be chanting around behind the plow. That's part of your morning program, you know. I mean, somehow or other, you know, it's a science. The morning hours are the best for spiritual life, and if you can't all come together in the temple for various reasons. I mean, I know it's true. It's not. You know, this morning program ending at 9 o'clock, then there's breakfast, you know, is not for working people who have to be at the office at 8 o'clock, which is an awful lot of people, you know. So, but at the same time, you know, how do we develop? I mean, it's a puzzle to me. How do you develop that concentrated, you know, spiritual energy where everyone is kind of, you know, chanting and dancing and coming together? I mean, that's what gives life to any community. You know, I mean, you can do it at home, certainly, and everyone should if you have to. But it's weaker in terms of working together. You know, the Sankirtan movement, you know, is that, okay, we're all going to put on a festival now. You know, okay, we're all going to, you know, it's just like we had here. When everyone gets together, you know, you have 200 people chanting together, that's a very powerful vibration. It has more effect on you, you know. Somehow or other, there has to be that regulation. And my experience is that it's easy to do it when there's a lot of other people around and there's some peer pressure and all these different things. I mean, I've never been a householder, but I imagine it must be more difficult. You have a child, do you get much sleep those first couple of, you know, months? Not so much, right? Don't they wake you up in the middle of the morning? And so it's difficult, but somehow you have to work through that if you want to be a devotee, right? I mean, you still have to chant. So maybe there's a tension set up there between, you know, farm life, as you're describing it, and the spiritual program Prabhupada set up. But if you're going to be Krishna conscious, there has to be hearing, chanting, has to be study Bhagavatam, worship of the deity, you know. So I have no easy answer for that. That's a puzzle, how to set up an ashram community where everybody's enlivened by the spiritual program, and then they go out and work very nicely in a Krishna conscious way. That's the real hard part. It's getting a little late.
Somebody sent me a text. It's Radhika and Vidhan Prabhu. He says, I'm listening to class Prabhu, you and Dravida Prabhu speaking about Srila Prabhupada's 50% of work needed to establish Varnashram. As a family, we have greatly felt the need for this and suffered its absence, as many have. How can we move forward with this? Radhika, the Mikanda Prabhu's wife.
That's a big question, which I don't think I can give you an answer to. But I really want to hear Mukunda's comment before we adjourn, because it's almost coming. Go ahead, Bindu. Back here.
Talking about something else, but I think the subject matter is really important, and I want to break the stream of this. So I think if you look at Ramananda Sambhad, And the conversation that Mahaprabhu had with Ramananda Roy, he asked him, you know, what is the goal of life? And Ramananda Roy, even though being an intimate associate of Mahaprabhu, he still started by mentioning Varnashram Dharma.
Right.
So many of the acharyas have said that you cannot jump past that stage to more elevated stages of bhakti without having accommodated the idea of Varnashram.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think Srila Prabhupada preached on two tracks. One was a wide net, which was inclusive of as many as could be gathered.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was a sort of inner track for those, according to their faith, wanted to try to progress directly in the science of bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to accommodate both mentalities. So on a wide net basis, Daivi Varnashram is very important.
Right.
But I think also it has to be accommodated that if you come to the process, if your faith has brought you to the point of accepting Harinam, accepting Diksha like this, then the other more exclusive track is I think, more predominant. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to think, if I'm a devotee and I've given my life for this 20, 30 years, 40 years, it's imperative that a morning program, if you cannot do it in the temple, has to be done in your home, but the same principles have to apply. A Mangal Arati, the chanting of whatever your prescribed number of rounds are, chanting of Anit, these sort of things have to be accommodated because it's what you've chosen as your life.
And that's the science, you know, that's the way to do it. There's no other alternative. Go ahead, Tom Harper.
I know we're late, so I think it's really quick. Following up on, I heard also Bhakti Trumaraj say this, and then I just to clarify, I asked him very directly within the last year, I spoke to him about this, that, you know, of course he was with Prabhupada in the very last days, and it was within maybe the last 3 days of Srila Prabhupada's life, he had another talk with Srila Prabhupada about this, and he said very clearly, Srila Prabhupada said, Varnashram Dharma is for the outsiders, not for the devotees, which is really kind of following up on what you're saying. In other words, it's a way of getting the whole society, getting them serving Krishna, working towards religious principles, but, you know, for those who are the dedicated, you know, Vaishnavas, it may not be so important.
Acha. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, Varnashram Acharya, I mean, that's the first answer, but that was also external. I mean, of course, even Sarvadharma Pratijal was external, so you go figure. Okay, Pran, go ahead.
I want to tell the story. It's a long story. Beautiful. Bhakti Siddhanta Surataku says, but just to let all of us to know that anybody got initiated in this line of Prabhupada, and if you are chanting your Gayatri, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says, you will end up in Ras Lila in some life soon.
Wow.
That's the story about it.
Okay. On that very positive note. Wait a minute. Parijata, we have to defer. What, you have the last word.
Okay. I was hearing a lecture, Srila Prabhupada saying, I didn't come to establish the Varnashram. Uh-huh. How could I? Everybody is so fallen. If the society just learns how to chant Hare Krishna, then everything will be fine. And it's like taking an elevator, a proper elevator, like you usually say. I mean, personally, I think my understanding is that since Prabhupada's books are here for the next 10,000 years, it'll take time. But if us, the pioneers, and we're supposed to be the leaders, if we are not develop purity, I mean, we should become like Prabhupada, a friend to all. If we work on our purity in our society, I think then we can also influence others who are not particularly want to come to chant Hare Krishna, but we have to develop perfect character and be loving to everybody, and we shouldn't fight amongst each other. How can we give the good example and influence others? And
I'll just conclude with this. It's like somebody who's coming new to this whole philosophy, nobody is going to be attracted just by, you know, description of Varnashram, right? They're going to be attracted by Krishna. Whatever you can give them of Krishna, that's going to attract them. Then in the context of that, you can enter, you know, you can Krishna talks about Varnashram Chaturvarna. I have a note here. Srila Prabhupada, oh boy, from the radio, boy. Srila Prabhupada has given the process of devotional service in the shortest way. There is no shortcut. And this is not signed. But, okay, in other words, he boiled it down, and we can't boil it anymore. 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, read Srimad Bhagavatam, live among the devotees, and worship the deities with devotion. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.